Tonight in our class on the Jewish home, I want us to discuss a mirror. Mirror seems like something very simple, right? You look, you see yourself. But we don't usually see ourselves. One of the things we avoid is taking a close look at ourselves. We tend to look out, we tend not to look in. And the Talmud tells us a scary line. The Talmud says there was once a rabbi that one of the people wasn't too happy with. And so the person went around and started spreading rumors that the rabbi was actually a slave. That his family was a family of slaves and he didn't have a good lineage. He came from a family of slaves. So the rabbi heard this and he convened his court. And he put out an official declaration that this man is a slave, that no one should marry into his family. This man comes from a family of slaves. So the man came charging into court, and he said, "By what right do you publicize that I'm a slave?" So the rabbi said, "I really had no proof whether you were a slave or not, but we have this tradition. Kol haposel b'mumo posel. If someone disqualifies other people, he's disqualifying them with his own flaws. The flaws you claim other people have are the flaws you in fact have yourself." Ooh. The Talmud says they put together a research team and they discovered that this man came from a family of slaves, that this was true. And this rule in Talmud is actually codified in the Shulchan Aruch, and it gives us an insight into ourselves. We look at other people and we say, "But he's wrong. Look at him." And we can say, "He's mean, he's unkind, he's unfair." There are a lot of things we can say. Chazal said, pause. It might be true about him, but the sensitivities that we have for flaws in other people stem from the flaws we have in ourselves. And this rule is a scary rule in marriage. We'll get to it in 1 second. Yes, Daniel?
I get the point that we shouldn't say bad things about others. Then I don't have a problem with the story. I have a problem with, what's the problem of coming from slaves? Because we say every day, every Shabbos, the thing we have to remember at Pesach, that we once were slaves in Egypt. So what's the problem? Also after 7 years, you're supposed to be like everybody else, go back to life, right? If you've been a Hebrew slave for 7 years. So
the intention was that he's a descendant from non-Jewish slaves, and therefore he is not a complete Jew. Okay, so I'm happy you called me on that. Good. The idea is that he's a descendant from a non-Jewish slave. When a non-Jew chooses to be a slave under Jewish ownership, he is given 1 year to decide whether he wants to take on a partial conversion. And then if he does, then he goes to mikvah and he gets a circumcision and he takes on a partial conversion, whereby he is obligated to a minimal amount of mitzvot, the amount that women have to keep. And if he will ever be freed, then he will be allowed to, then he will be forced to, he will be responsible to immerse again and complete his giyur process. But so long as that doesn't happen, he is a half-Jew. He's in limbo. He's not a non-Jew, and he's not a Jew. He's a non-Jewish slave, who is now obligated to many to a certain amount of mitzvot. Now he has a choice. He doesn't have to do this. He can say, "I don't want this," and then we'll pass him on. He won't remain in the ownership of a Jew. It's up to him. But coming back to ourselves, this is a scary point if you think about it in any relationship. It's especially scary in marriage. They quote a Zohar. I don't learn Zohar, so I wouldn't know. But they quote a Zohar that says that in the world to come, the one who's going to judge us is our own wife. Now, if you speak to the average person and you ask them to describe someone who is unkind, unfair, mean, vicious, many people will tell you, "Yeah, it's my wife." Oh boy, isn't that scary? So I'll tell you a secret. This is especially true after you've been married about 3 months. What happens, sometimes it takes a year or a year and a half, But what happens in a relationship is that there's first infatuation. Person sees someone and they get all excited. It's like the guy who showed up to class once and said, true story. Guy showed up to class and said, Rabbi, I know we're supposed to talk about marriage, but I went to an engagement party and there was this girl who I really love her. But no one was there to set me up with her. And I said, did you talk to her?
No.
He said, no. I said, then why do you love her? Well, I said, so her looks attracted you. You know nothing about her. Well, it's not only her looks. I think I know her personality. What do you know? You didn't say a word to her. So there is a first stage, and a stage of infatuation, and that stage can last through engagement and up to marriage. Person gets very excited over the person they're dating. They don't really know them. It's all a facade. You don't know. A friend of mine told me this story about a coworker who lived with a girl. They weren't observant, so they were roommates, intimate roommates, for years. And then they decided to get married, and within 2 years they were divorced. How come? Because marriage is different. It's different. And the first stage of a relationship, and that stage can last a long time until you get married, you get very excited, and it's all external. It's all superficial. It's a stage. It's an important stage, and it's the stage that will help us decide who to marry. But we have to realize that that's not the real relationship. The real relationship starts the morning after marriage. And then what happens is, at one point, it can take you a day, it can take you 3 months, it can take you a year and a half. Usually it doesn't take more than 2 years. For most people, it doesn't take more than 2 weeks. You reach disenchantment. The next stage is, you say, oh my gosh, I can't believe I married this person. Now that happens to everyone. Yeah. Everyone. I'll tell you a story that's happened many times. A guy shows up 2 months, 3 months after marriage, says, Rabbi, I gotta talk to you. So we go into the room, and I say, don't say a word, let me tell you. He says, no, you don't know. I say, let me talk, and you tell me if I'm wrong. She's a witch. She has no understanding. You thought she was kind, but it was all a fake. And you have relationships. You've known people in your life. Your friends tell you you're a nice guy, but with her, you can't expect me to live with her, Rabbi. I say, that's what you were going to say, right? And the guy looks at me and says, if you knew, how'd you let me marry her? But this happens. Not once, and not twice. And every guy is convinced that his case is different. Every guy will tell you, no, I don't believe it. I've seen my parents' marriage. I've seen other people. This isn't, no one believes that what they're going through is what other people are going through. You ask any guy, he'll tell you, nah, I know my friends. Their wife didn't throw dishes at them. No, you don't know. They didn't tell you, just like you're not telling them. Every person will tell you theirs is different. I spoke to her and I thought she has a modicum of intelligence throughout the dating. She certainly impressed me that way. And then I said to her, when you read your credit card, you shouldn't do it on a bus. And the next thing I know, she's on the bus and she's reading her credit card to someone. And the next thing I know, we got this whopping bill and I have to fight with identity theft. And here in Israel, it's not like the United States. Most credit cards do not give you insurance for identity theft here. Bear that in mind. Now what? But I asked her, I explained it to her. So she can't understand. How come she gets so upset? I go shopping. She gives me a list of 20 things. I rack my brains. I can't figure it out. I get 19 of the 20. And then none of the 20. So I got the wrong detergent. Okay, what's the big deal? I come into the house and she tells me, now for 2 months I'm going to use the stinky detergent you just got me. Wait a second. I just spent an hour and a half trying to get everything right. So I got one thing wrong. What's she getting so upset about? Every guy, a month, 2 months, sometimes it'll take them a year and a half to figure out
this is not what I thought I was getting into. She was so nice when we were dating. What's going on here? But I want you to know that every marriage that you see that's a success, and every marriage that you see that people are happy, had to go through this stage. And you should know that you're not seeing yourself. As much as you think that it's difficult living with her, I'll ask a very personal question. No one should answer it, okay? But is there anyone in this classroom that when they get into bed at night, they go to the hamper and put their socks there? Okay, don't answer that question, okay? What does the average guy do? The socks go on the side of the bed. Now, does he remember the next morning to do something with them? That's a good question. How come a guy will be sitting, working on the computer, he eats half an apple, he puts it down, and then he continues working on the computer, and 2 days later, he wonders why the ants find that apple so interesting? What happened? Wait a second. Couldn't you take that apple and put it away? But guys don't do that. And if he happens to be flossing as he's on the way to shut the computer and do something else, you never know where that floss is going to end up. But ask the average girl, and she's not ready for that. She doesn't know that this is what's going to happen, that she's going to sit down and think she's putting her hand on the mouse, and suddenly there's an anthill right there on that mouse. It's that apple that he conveniently forgot there. That she asked him for a month and said, you know, is it such a big deal to go to the hamper and put your socks there? I'm going to do the laundry, but can you just put your socks there? And how many times does the guy say, I'll take out the garbage? And he means to take out the garbage, but he forgets to take out the garbage. And then she needs to cook, and she's peeling carrots, and the garbage overfloweth, and she's trying. And when he comes home, he's like, excuse me, if you're going to put peels on the floor, I agreed to take out the garbage. Am I also to pick up the bit? Hold it. We don't see how difficult it is to live with that creature called a man. We don't see it. You've been living with a man here in the dorm. We don't see it. I'll give you one more example, and I'll get to you in 1 second. Go look at the lunchroom, okay? If you paid attention tonight at what happened, guys sat down, everyone took their food, and they started eating. And the next thing that started happening was a bunch of grunts. This guy wants the salt. You ever notice, pay attention, tomorrow you go down to lunch, watch all the men grunting, okay? It's like speeches, if they'll talk with the mouth full, okay, maybe they'll do that. But there's a lot of grunting going on. There's a lot of, you know, hand motions. Women don't do that. So what kind of creature did she marry? But she's not going to tell you that, but you'll be ready to tell her that. Shalom, what's your name? Shalom, Max.
What's the class, anyways?
This class is about the Jewish home. Okay. Baruch Haba, Max. Where are you from?
I'm from Hamilton, Ontario.
Oh, very nice.
So here's my point of view on at least the garbage section. I've been taking out the trash for a while in my own house across the neighborhood. So I wouldn't have too much of an issue with it as long as we figured out a system of being hypothetical. What's hypothetical person I married?
Okay, I hear you, Max. Good. Yes.
How do you, if everyone does it, and it's a success marriage, get out of it? What's deserves it? Is there a trick or is it just a pause?
Oh, so we'll get to that now. But the first point is, we have to realize it's normal that we go from infatuation to disenchantment. And because this class is different than other classes, we're only getting to this in the third or fourth class of the series. Ordinarily, this is the first class in the series, and that is the realization that marriage is going to involve work. No good marriage happens without work. People have this misconception. People believe that you fall into love, and then you fall out of love. No, you fall into infatuation. And if you're going to invest and work, you will create love. Love is the product of work. Love is not what you fell into when you saw her and you had this imagined picture of who you're marrying. That's not love. When you hear those songs, I was in a supermarket and I heard a country song. I was on a bus and I heard this song, a song in Hebrew. I was embarrassed. The guy's talking to her about how much he loves her. He loves her flowing hair. He loves her beautiful smile. He loves her twinkling eyes. He loves nothing. He loves himself as I do who she is. What are you saying you love? You don't love anything. You love yourself. That's not love.
Yeah.
Love is I'll get up and I'll do that diaper. You don't have to do that diaper. Love is I'll go fill the gas in the car. Love is take another 10 minutes and you sleep late and I'll deal. Love is at the end of the meal Friday night, I'll clear the table. You sit down, you had a hard week.
Love is I'll stand up for you if somebody bothers you.
Okay. The perspective that the songs give us is though love is about what's nice about the person. So there's a very nice story, famous story, Rav Avigdor Miller. You guys heard of Rav Avigdor Miller? So I had the good fortune of learning in Meir when Rav Avigdor Miller lived down the block from Meir. And you could set your watch based on the time he would walk by the yeshiva. Very organized person. And Rav Avigdor Miller once saw a student slobbering over a fish. So he says to him, young man, can you tell me something about that fish? So he looks at the fish and he says, Rabbi, I love fish. So the rabbi looks at him and says, you love fish? Then shouldn't you buy a fish tank? If you love the fish, would you be eating it? Ah, no, you love yourself. You love what fish means to you. You don't love the fish. Do I love the wife or do I love myself? Well, when you walk into marriage, you might say you love the wife, but what you really love is what you believe she will be for you. It's all about ourselves when we walk into the relationship. You want real love? Start giving and then give some more. But then don't get frustrated that you're giving so much. Ah, but we do get frustrated. Why do I have to give so much? Why do you have to give so much? Because that's the way life works. And every guy will tell you, I'm giving what too much. This isn't fair. Ask any guy who's in this first 5-7 years of marriage. This is completely not fair. And every guy believes no one else is giving as much as he is. So I'm telling you, it might take you a month. It might take you a year. It might take you a year and a half. By the end of the second year of marriage, you will be convinced that you married, you really got a bad deal. I married a lemon. Oh boy. And no one else is going to tell you that. And if they're going to tell you that, then you'll sit down and have this conversation like people like to have and say, marriage stinks. It's such like one guy told me after I got married, he says, you know, they have flypaper, right? You hang it from the ceiling and all the flies are flying around and they all see all the other flies who took a lick and got stuck and died. But that's what marriage is. You can't stay away. You see everyone else gets stuck in the ice, so you run for it too. That's wrong. That's not true. Marriage is the greatest source of blessing in a person's life. Marriage is the fulfillment of your purpose in life. You want to have a life with purpose? You need to do it with a partner. The creation of man is male, female, together, building a home. It says a man who's not married is not yet a man. I'm a man. No, you're not. You need a woman to be a man. Yeah, you want to create life. You want to bring purpose. You want to develop. Well, that's what marriage is. But then how come it's so hard? Because it's the greatest blessing in the world. And the first rule we have to remember, the first rule is you cannot question whether you should have married this person. Okay? The most destructive thing that happens in a marriage is when people start saying, maybe I shouldn't have married her. We're not talking about expressing it to her. We're talking about in our own minds. And no marriage can withstand that doubt. It doesn't matter how good the person you married is. If you're going to walk around asking yourself that question, you will never be happy. And I'll explain why in a second. So you want to question whether you should marry her. Do that in date 1. Do that in date 10. Do that before you got engaged. Do that before you walked down the aisle. You married her? from that moment onward, that question doesn't enter your mind. But sure it does, Rabbi. Who are you kidding? A friend of mine, I told him this rule, and he said, that's funny. I went to a class in Russia, and I said to the rabbi, class on marriage, I was married 2 years, and I said, Rabbi, you know, for 2 years I've been wondering, did I marry the right person or not? So the rabbi looked me in the eye and said, young man, I've been married 27 years, and for 27 years I've been asking the same question. That's not right. So the rabbi meant it as a joke. But the truth is that you can spend your whole life questioning that. But you know what? It's very hard for any marriage to succeed. Because the way marriage works is about every 10, 15 minutes that you're together, there's something little annoying that happens. Every about 20 seconds that you're together, a wonderful thing happens which you overlook and take for granted. So the ratio is about 80-90 to 1. But we ignore the 80-90 and we notice the 1. Okay? That's the way it works. Let's take a simple example. You sit down for dinner. What would be if you were a bachelor? You'd be sitting down alone. You might not have the food. Someone divided with you the cost, the effort, putting the food on the table, taking it out of the fridge, putting it back, cleaning up after you. There's a lot that goes into eating a simple dinner, right? You came home, there was someone to talk to. You're going to go to sleep, there's someone to work with. All of life is different. But what do we notice? We notice that she forgot to make the toast I asked her. We notice that now I have to wash twice the amount of dishes. We notice all kinds of little stupidities, and they're annoying to us. Hey, I washed the dishes last night. Why didn't she offer tonight? She did the shopping. She did the cooking. She did the cleaning. She did everything she could. Ah, but she didn't offer tonight to do the dishes, and that's what you'll notice. You won't notice anything else. And when you come home and your shirts aren't ironed, you'll forget, wait a second. She washed the shirts, she hung the shirts to dry, she folded the other laundry, she did her job, she did a million things. And I just walked through the front door and the shirts aren't ironed and I'm thinking, well, I have a shirt to wear tomorrow. Did I notice anything else she did? No. That's, we take for granted. The floor's been washed, you take it for granted. Everything we take for granted, but when something isn't there, that's what we notice. So when a guy has a complaint, he's usually ignoring about 90 to 100 things that led up to that complaint. And I always say, did you thank her about 90, 100 times before you said your one complaint? Ah, no. No, when was the last time someone said, thank you for doing the laundry? Ask yourselves, you guys came from home? When was the last time you thanked someone for that? When was the last time you said, thank you for buying the food? When we sit down for Friday night meal, very often the kids have comments. Oh no, it's that chicken again. You guys know that? You're not so far from that age. Okay, you probably remember that.
All humans are ingrates.
But we have to work on that. And if we change that, then we can enjoy life. It's a key to life. When we sit down for the meal, I ask the kids, who thanked Dima for doing the shopping this week? Who thanked Dima for cooking? Who thanked Dima for washing the dishes after she cooked? Who thanked Dima for setting the table? Who thanked Dima for preparing the dishes for the meals? Did you thank? I asked them, you know how many stores Dima had to go to for this meal to be here? The challah comes from one store, the chicken comes from another store, and the fruits and vegetables from a third. Did anyone say thank you? Ah, but I will say that I thought you were preparing the other chicken tonight, and you prepared that chicken. Dima, why'd you prepare that chicken? Hold it, wait a second, that's not fair. There are so many things you should say thank you for. But that's true in marriage. And if we can see the good and the positive, we will be happy. What we don't see, so I'll tell you a story. Phenomenal story. There was a man, and he had a certain problem. He couldn't get married. And he had a lot of pets. He had so many pets that there wasn't an animal in the world that wasn't his pet. And he would take turns. True story. I'll even tell you the person's name at the end of the story. The guy would try to take to bed with him different animals. He tried to feel good with life. So he tried taking a dog, and he tried taking a cat, and he tried taking a squirrel, and he tried taking a chipmunk, and he tried every different animal, thinking maybe life will be good. And life wasn't good. And then he found one girl. It was a surprise. It wasn't expected. One girl who actually matched. And He married her. And then she messed up on the first dinner. Okay? So he looked at her and said, "What did I marry you for? You messed up the first dinner. I told you I don't like that. I don't want to eat that food. Why'd you do that?" And you know what? Ever since then, we're all plagued with that ingratitude. The man is Adam, okay? Our sages say when Adam was created, he tried intimacy with every single animal. He took every animal to bed with him, intimately. And he was frustrated. He said, "This doesn't match, and that doesn't match, and that doesn't match. This isn't good for me." And finally, Hashem gives him the greatest gift. It says he woke up and he saw Eve. And he grabbed her and he hugged her and he kissed her and he said, "You're the most amazing thing on the planet. Finally, I have a partner." But then she messed up on dinner, right? She gave him the wrong food. So he looked, oh, she messed up. Okay, so he looks at her and says, "Oh boy, what do I have you for?" Hashem shows up to the picture, and what does Adam say? "Life was good till she showed up. I didn't make mistakes till she came around. You got the greatest gift. Hashem changed creation for you." But you know what? Our sages say we are all called Bnei Adam. We're all descendants of that Adam HaRishon. And we all have that weakness. And so I want to recap everything we discussed tonight. We began with Kol HaPosel B'Mumo Posel. When we see a flaw in others, it's pretty scary. What we're really seeing is our own flaws. That's a point to think about. We said in the beginning of every marriage, people are frustrated. We go from infatuation to disenchantment. And only then, after we've worked out the disenchantment, can we start building a real relationship. And every relationship has to go through that. And if your parents tell you it never happened, either they want to keep it hidden from you, or they don't remember. And I bless you that none of you will remember either, because if a marriage reaches a point where it's so good, then you don't think about it, and you have a hard time remembering. What was that? I don't remember that. I don't remember. Life was good. Life is good, right? You don't remember that. It becomes a given, but it takes years. Disenchantment can last a long time. But the key point is that we cannot question the decision. Enemy number one of beginning marriages is that question that a person says to himself, "Should I have married her?" And it's mind over matter. Every person has to make a decision. I will not go there. Because our natural inclination is to say, "I don't have to put up with this. I don't want to put up with this. And this isn't what I thought I was getting myself into." And everyone has that. So a person has to decide, "I'm not going that route." It's not a question of, will this work? It's a question of, how will this work? And one of the tools we can use to make it work is to show appreciation. If I can express appreciation, I'll start seeing what's right in the marriage. But we don't do that. And we think we're entitled. And we're overlooking a tremendous amount of blessing that comes with marriage. Just think back to Adam. We will discuss other tools. We just discussed one today. There are many tools that one can apply. There's the recognition that time heals and time builds. And every wave that you overcome makes you stronger, makes the relationship stronger. Now, we will discuss problem solving, we will discuss approaching issues, we will discuss many things, but for tonight, we have to remember, it's always difficult, no one has it easy, there's no marriage you see that's good that didn't go through times that were rough, and all the faults you see cannot bring you to a point of questioning, should I have married her? We will revisit that point as well, but no marriage can stand up to that question, because every marriage has many moments in a day that are annoying, but it has many more moments that are special. The question is, will I see them? And we will also discuss about, will I create them? And that's something we'll discuss later on. Questions? Yes?
What happens if we have almost the reverse? Like, you go into the marriage knowing that you will never be able to pay off the amount of debt that she will give amount of greatness that she'll be able to give to you. Is there an amount that could feasibly harm you?
I don't understand the question.
Let's say we sit down this year, and this year really does impact us. And a year, two, three, however long it takes for any of us to get married, we end up going, we get married, and we recognize, I will never be able to outdo the amount of greatness that my wife is giving to me. Is there too much of that in our minds that could feasibly harm us?
So that's a very classical question. Many men ask, if I show so much appreciation, she'll just do less. And if I show so much appreciation, it'll just get their head.
I'm just saying it
plays itself out in many different variations. All I can say is that there's an exception to every rule. For sure there are situations where a person is going too far, but almost always the opposite is true. Almost always a person is not expressing enough hakarat hatov, and if a person is careful to constantly reiterate his appreciation, then a person will develop an environment of positive emotion, and that's an environment which develops growth. We all grow when we feel like we're appreciated, so then we want to live up to it. And when someone comes and tells us, you did that wrong, and you really shouldn't have done that, you know how annoying it is when you did the other thing? That puts us down, that takes away our strength, and that makes us that much weaker, and to a point it even freezes us from further development. So I don't think a person has to be so concerned that they'll show too much appreciation.
Well, no, it's not the concept of showing too much appreciation. It's the idea of so-and-so goes into marriage and he knows in the back of his mind that he's never going to be able to live up to this. But even though he knows that, he just knows that. It's kind of like that. In my mind, what I'm thinking is that
maybe say, like, this was a girl I knew from pre-K, and it's sort of like I think I know, so I really know how much I love her. And before we get married, we already knew in middle school, we were always so close, and in yeshiva, whatever, we went to learn, but I still knew it was going to be, and then by the time it gets to marriage, I already know how much I appreciate this person, and then just, okay, I go under the chuppah, but that was almost just like a technicality.
I don't know if that, maybe not. I mean, this is a little bit, sometimes painting it a little bit gross, and that all women, also women have their thoughts. You know, they think that if
we
things
all
are not perfect, the definition of a perfect marriage is if things are not going smoothly, it must mean I married also the wrong guy. They also do the same.
That's understandable. And that's completely comprehensible. We all have our own faults. We'll be able to understand that, even though, yes, we're going to have time, but we don't guess most of the time.
And then you will say to you, I'm sure that guy doesn't do like you.
Some people could have less of that doubt. Yes. Some people could have less of that.